Chapter 7. The great forest never ceased to take my breath away. The tunnel that led into the gloom from the northern iron gate exited out onto a ledge that overlooked the forest, and the dark green and purple leaves of the gnarled and twisted trees looked beautiful from up here. How they could exist in the absence of sunlight was a complete mystery to me, but I love this underground world. Emeril and I headed down into the forest on the little used path I'd become familiar with. The glowing blue gloom mushrooms provided the dim light that gave these caves and caverns their name, and as the two of us silently crept through the strange woods, we kept an eye out for signs of Ursinger's men, but I was also looking for signs of the brownies. It wasn't long before we hit a patch of woods where the path opened up a little, not far from the river that cut through the forest, and a group of the small, rat-like people came out of the underbrush. Finally! I grinned as I took off my backpack and fished around for the candy I'd brought for them.
I'll never understand why you are so enamored with them,
the horned woman said as she watched me kneel down, and the group of brownies bowed in response. Then I opened the bag of candies and laid it on the ground. They've really helped me out a few times, I replied as the lead warrior came up to me to accept the bag of colorfully wrapped candies. I didn't see the scarred brownie that I'd assumed was the leader of this tribe of wild brownies, and I wondered where he was. But the warrior leading this foraging group squeaked a few times at me and bowed again as the other brownies emptied out the crinkling bag. I looked closely at the head warrior, and I tried to find any distinguishing features that would help me remember him the next time we met. The thing that set him apart from the other brown, furry creatures was that his large ears were set much lower on his head than most of the others, and how big he was for a brownie. Once the bag was empty, Dumbo bowed again, as if to say thank you, and squeaked, and I wished I had a way to understand them as I watched them disappear back into the undergrowth. All right, I said, as I stood and saw the last of the brownies run into the nearby bushes. Let's go see if we can find Scourge. We can cut southeast and get there through the thieves' caves.
Whatever you say, partner.
Amrila purred as she winked at me. Before we continued on into the rest of the gloom, the red-skinned woman and I took out our headphones and put them around our necks so we'd be at the ready. Last time we traveled through the Inni territory, Ursinger's men had been out in force, and we didn't want to be caught off guard if things came down to a fight. We followed the river south until it started toward the gloom growth, where the gloom mushrooms grew up to be 10 feet tall. Amreel and I had once encountered a giant spider there, and the mushroom forest still kind of creeped me out a bit. But as we left the edge of the great forest and made our way across a small, rocky plain on our way to the safety of the thieves' caves, there was a high-pitched screech from overhead. The sound echoed off the cavern walls, and I twisted my head around, back and forth to try to find the source. Then, from the southeast, I saw a formation of lightly armored Nyctors flying in formation. They were about 200 yards away, and because of the distance, it was hard to tell how high up in the air they were without a stable point of reference. But what I did know was that they would be on top of us within seconds. Headphones! I shouted as I turned on my Pro X's and put them over my ears. Amrila did the same, and I also clicked on the red dot on my Galil, charged it, and took aim at the nearest Nyctor in formation. I knew they were the most dangerous when they were in the air, so I got a bead on the lead Nyctor's chest, took a deep breath, and pulled the trigger. Up in the air there was a spray of blood as my bullet ripped a hole in the Nyctor's chest, and it fell out of the sky. The body plummeted and then splattered on the ground below as it hit the rock floor of the cavern. But in the commotion of the first beast dying, I noticed something odd. As the blast of my rifle triggered my Pro X's and the world went quiet for a moment, the flying patterns of the Nyctors became erratic for a split second before they returned to their formation. I realized that even though the Nyctors saw better than a regular bat, they still have those big-ass ears and relied partially on sound to find their way around. And when my rifle fired, the sound fucked with them big time. The Nyctors got back into formation, with six of them surrounding one in the middle, so I took aim again, put my bead on the one in the center, and squeezed the trigger again. This time, I hit the monster I aimed at in the shoulder, and it dropped several feet. Gotcha, you fugly bastard! I shouted triumphantly. The other six started to spread out and formed a reverse flying V pattern to try to flank us, but the sound of the rifle again caused them to fly erratically. The one closest to the horned woman and I on the left veered off and crashed hard into a stalactite, and then it fell to the ground with a loud thud and a cloud of dust from its impact. As the group of Nyctors began to surround us, Amrila put her back against mine, and I knew she was ready to attack as soon as one came within reach of her swords. We stood back to back, so none of the enemies could get the drop on us, and I shot the wounded Nyctor again, as he lagged behind the others, since his ruined shoulder made it harder for him to stay in the air. As I fired, the world went quiet while my pro-X's protected my ears from the worst of the blast. The wounded Nyctor fell, and its hollow bones shattered as it hit the hard ground. Even better, the other beasts were disoriented by the blast once again. One of the bat-like monsters shrieked, and the others landed as the deafening sound of my rifle forced them to abandon the air. Now, the Nyctor stood on the ground in a semicircle around the Zinkari woman and me. My partner and I started to move as a team, and we kept our backs together, but slowly turned so we could be flat-footed as the Nyctors tried again to flank us. Then, the bat monsters rushed forward in an attempt to close the gap and make the range of my rifle useless. The beast that I was facing was 5 yards away, so I hit the button on my laser, trained it on the Nyctor, and blew him away. Nathan had been right. The laser was awesome, and I was happy my strategy of matching the laser a bit below the red dot on my trailer wall to sight it in had worked. The bat bastard was blown backwards and fell to the ground as I turned to face the next one, and Amrila anticipated and responded to my movements as she kept her back to mine and faced a Nyctor of her own on the other side. I could hear the sound of steel on steel behind me as the red-skinned woman fought back her Nyctor, and I fired on another that screamed as it ran toward me with its sword raised. I used the laser to train my Galil on his forehead, right between the eyes, as he came within 3 yards of me. I fired, and the Nyctor's head snapped back as its brains flew out the back of its head. Then I dropped to one knee and turned to the left to fire at the next one. The laser was fucking amazing at quickly acquiring targets, and as soon as I saw the little red dot of light on the Nyctor's abdomen, I fired and watched as the bullet tore a bloody hole through the beast. Not having to fuck with the sight in close combat really made things go quickly. But before I could aim at the final Nyctor, Amrila turned her upper body in a sharp swing of one of her swords, took the head off the bat monster she'd been fighting, and used the follow-through to run the last Nyctor through. Before the head of the decapitated Nyctor had settled on the ground, the Zinkari was wiping her blades clean and looking around to see if there were any left.
Fighting is not as much fun when you use your gun,
the horned woman pouted.
You just kill everything before I get to have any fun.
I'll leave more for you next time, I chuckled. Let's get out of here before any of Vercinger's soldiers show up.
But we didn't even check their pockets,
the half-demon woman protested. I know, I said in a consoling tone, since I knew how much it hurt my greedy wife's heart to leave a body unlooted. But the Inni soldiers use the Nyctors as scouts, and the sound of the rifle carries pretty far down here. Even if the echo makes it hard for them to figure out which direction the sound came from, I don't want to wait around for half the Yeni army to show up.
Okay,
Amrila said as she sullenly kicked at a small rock and stuck out her lower lip. We quickly started back on our way to the thieves' tunnels, and we kept an eye to the northeast for any possible soldiers who might have been following the Nyctors. But once we found the entrance to the thieves' tunnels, we could relax a little. At the very least, we wouldn't encounter any of Vercinger's men in these secret passages. Though it was possible we'd encounter other thieves, and as much as I loved my wife, I knew she might not be on the best terms with every individual who knew about these tunnels. Luckily, we didn't encounter anyone else, and we were able to follow the network of tunnels to the cavern just outside of the village of Bermshire. The land around the village was peaceful farmlands. The wooden houses and silos were all strangely dome-shaped, and the crops seemed to grow without season. Amrila and I came out of the tunnels in a hidden alcove, and we moved out into the farmlands while trying to look like any other travelers. Still, I didn't worry too much about the people here seeing me, despite the fact that my appearance was strange to them. Bermshire was a stronghold of anti-Ursinger sentiment, and from what I could tell, the center of a small resistance that had sprung up against the psychotic chief of the Yinni Night Elves. But I still did my best not to draw attention to myself. The horned woman and I cut across the fields of all grains, and when we came to the edge of the village, we took as many back and side streets as we could.
I think we should head to Grok's Tavern,
Amrila said as we walked between two quaint houses on the poorer side of town.
He usually knows where to find Scourge.
I don't think Grok likes us very much. I replied as I thought back to my last few run-ins with the orcish tavern keeper.
No.
The red-skinned woman agreed with a shrug of her slim shoulders.
But he likes coin, and we have plenty of that.
But as we came around the back of the blacksmith's shop, just down the street from the tavern, I heard two familiar voices that sounded like they were in an argument.
I'm not paying full price for a shipment I haven't received yet.
I heard Durgan, the dwarven blacksmith, say in a heated tone,
You go back to them and tell them I'll pay as soon as I know the ore actually exists.
That's not how these people work, you insufferable little man.
Scourge's urbane drawl came from around the corner.
They take all the risk, so they expect payment up front.
Don't you call me little, you son of a demon whore!
The dwarf's angered voice shot back. As Amrila and I came around the front of the shop, the Zinkari woman put her hands on her slender hips and leveled a withering gaze at the dark-haired dwarf through the front of the open-air blacksmith shop.
Durgan?
The horned woman admonished the swarthy dwarf.
What kind of way is that to talk about whores? Aren't those women's lives difficult enough already without wishing a son like Scourge on them?
Amrila.
The dark Zinkari man smiled as he turned and saw the two of us.
Eddie, what brings you to our fair village?
Durgan didn't look happy about the interruption, and he turned to pump the billows of his forge a few times. We were in the area and thought we'd stop by, I said as Scourge came up to shake my hand. Can we buy you a drink?
That sounds refreshing.
The charcoal-skinned man replied,
Just allow me to finish my business here, and I will gladly accompany you both.
We have nothing further to discuss.
The dark-haired dwarf huffed from his billows as he checked a length of metal that he'd put in the flames.
Either bring me my goods or return the money I've already given you.
Scourge turned back to the two of us with a wry smile on his face.
You'll have to forgive Durgan,
the Zinkari man said.
He's not nearly drunk enough to feel like himself today. Come, let's get a little drunk ourselves.
Then Scourge swept out of the blacksmith shop with a flourish of his black and sapphire-collared cloak. Under his fine cloak, the half-demon man wore a well-fitted, deep-blue jerkin and soft black pants with shin-high boots to match. Scourge's curving black horns were much larger than Amrila's, and they were tipped with gold. Everything about the strange man indicated he had a taste for the finer things. But under the foppish act, I suspected there was something more to the Zinkari man. Scourge seemed to know about everything going on in the gloom, and I was happy he was on our side. Scourge started to head toward Grok's tavern, but Amrila and I stopped when we were just out of earshot of the blacksmith's shop.
Actually,
I said in a quiet tone, I was just using the drink as an excuse to talk in private. Grok kinda asked us not to ever come back to his place the last time we were there.
Grok says that all the time.
The Zinkari man chuckled as he paused a few feet ahead of us.
The secret is to ignore him and spend lots of money.
Are you sure? I asked. He sounded pretty serious to me.
Trust me.
Scourge assured as he continued up the street. I looked over at the horned woman next to me with a questioning expression, but she just shrugged and followed Scourge, so I went along too. We passed through the town square where the rest of the market was. Grok's tavern was at the far end of the market from us, and we passed various carts and booths selling food, produce, and other wares. About halfway through the village center, I saw Scourge crouch down briefly and assumed he was adjusting his boot until I came up next to him and saw a small, brownie woman. The rat-like woman wore a little, brown, A-line dress with long sleeves, like many of the women of Bermshire. The brownie came halfway up Scourge's shin, and the dark-skinned man was looking down at her with an intense expression as she squeaked and gestured. It took me half a second to realize the Zinkari man was listening to the brownie woman.
Scourge can speak with the brownies?
I whispered to Amrila as she too paused and waited for the dark-skinned man to finish his conversation.
It appears so.
The horned woman quietly replied.
But I imagine that if you ask him about it, he'll say something terribly pretentious like, Oh, only the brownies in town. The country brownies have an almost incomprehensible accent.
Amrila did a shockingly accurate impression of Scourge, and I wondered how long they'd known each other. It was spot on. I could only imagine what a good source of information the Brownies in Bermshire would be, though. Most of the people of the Gloom seemed to ignore the tiny race, and treated them more like tolerated pests than fellow citizens. Scourge squeaked back at the woman a couple of times, handed her a small coin, and stood as she scurried off, and I made a mental note to ask the Zinkari man to give me some Brownie language pointers. Then, the three of us walked into Grok's tavern and looked around for an open table. The tavern and inn wasn't a large establishment. There were 5 tables arranged around the rush-strewn floor and several seats along the bar. And the orcish owner was wiping down the bar top with a rag and glowered at us as we came in. Scourge led Amrila and I to one of the tables in the corner of the common area. There weren't many patrons in the tavern, so we had our pick of seating. Once we'd sat down, Grok came over, set 3 tall steins on the table that were filled with an amber liquid, and scowled at the three of us.
"I trust you all will pay up front,"
the tavern keeper growled. Scourge looked over at me with a raised eyebrow, and I fished 3 silver coins out of the pouch I'd brought. Amrila caught my eyes and discreetly held up 4 fingers, so I brought out another silver coin and handed them to Grok. The orc jingled the coins in his large hand for a second, before he looked once more at me and walked back to the bar.
"See?" the dark-skinned man said in an amused tone. "Just spend some money and all is forgiven."
"I guess," I said as I watched the orc walk across the tavern. "Which reminds me." I reached into my backpack and pulled out the lovely tin box that had the tea I'd gotten for Scourge in it. When I held it out to the Zinkari man, he cocked his head to one side and had an expression that was both pleased and curious. It took him a moment to work off the tightly fitted lid and to reveal the little white bags filled with dried leaves and herbs. The Zinkari man's brow knitted as he looked at the contents of the tin, and then he leaned forward and sniffed deeply.
"You brought me tea?"
Scourge almost sounded touched, and he lifted one of the small bags up by the string connected to it.
"What a clever idea. Do you steep it in these adorable little pouches?"
"Yeah." I nodded and smiled at the grown man's amusement over the invention of the tea bag. "Just put it right in the hot water, pull it out after a few minutes, and you're ready to drink."
"And this aroma?"
The dark-skinned man sniffed at the bag again.
"What is it?"
"I have no idea," I snorted. "Whatever Earl Grey liked, I guess."
"An Earl," Scourge repeated. "What is that?"
I guess it's kind of like a chieftain," I said.
"Really?"
he asked, and he sounded impressed.
"And this came from an Earl?"
"The greyest of Earls," I replied with a shrug.
"Well, then I shall savor it."
The Zinkari man gingerly put the bag in the tin and closed it again, as if it was a great treasure.
"So, what did you come all the way to Bermshire to talk to me about?"
The dark-skinned man put the tin box in a pouch he carried over his shoulder and then turned back to Amrila and me with an attentive look on his angular face.
"We were wondering if you would like to help us take the first step toward bringing down the tyrant Ursinger,"
Amrila said in a low voice.
"Gifts and some political intrigue."
Scourge smirked.
"What a good day this is turning out to be. What did you have in mind?"
"What do you know about Ursinger's private retreat outside of the inny capital?" I asked in a whisper. The broad, toothy smile on the Zinkari man's face told me he knew an awful lot.